So welcome back to another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. And it's Chris Hill in the hot seat once again. And joining me today are our full complement of Loose Heads co-founders. It's Rob Shorten, Mark Shorten and Dave Nichol. Guys, how are things? It seems like an age since we last recorded a podcast as a four.
Yeah, good, yeah. Thanks.
Good.
Yeah. The sun's out as well in Bristol, so that's nice.
It's not in Wilms, though.
No, never is in Wilms, though.
Oh, no. But last week we did have the weather in Cheshire, which was nice, and it's some exciting stuff that we did last week for Loose Heads, and over the next couple of weeks with the launch of the new website and the new merchandise, and we'll go into a little bit more detail about that towards the end of the podcast. But you may have seen on Instagram over the last couple of weeks that we did do a bit of behind the scenes stuff around the photo shoot for the new merchandise and website. So do keep your eyes peeled for that. And once again, many thanks to everyone who was involved in the day and making it happen too. And of course, the ambassadors who came down on the day as well. But without further ado, let's introduce our next guest to the podcast. And we've already had John Hardy and John Barkley on the pod. So we thought, why not make it a hat-trick of legendary Scottish back rowers? So I'm delighted to say that Hamish Watson joins us this morning. Hamish, thanks so much for giving up your time to speak to us today. How's things with you and how's things during the lockdown period for you?
Yeah, not sure I'm quite a legend, but I'll take that introduction. It's been going well. Lockdown's been good in a way that I've been able to spend a lot of time with my family. And luckily, no one in my family's been affected by it. Obviously, if you have, it's obviously a pretty dreadful situation. But for me, lockdown's been a bit of time to reflect on stuff. And like I say, spend a bit more time than I usually would with the family. But I have to say, after 3 months, I was looking forward to getting back into training, which is quite weird because normally after a 2 week break or something, you're dreading it. But it was actually quite nice to go back and see a few people. Obviously, it's very very different at the moment. We're still practicing social distancing with training, so we've got our own little mini gyms, and we're all training in a little bubble in our own little groups. So it's all a bit different, but I suppose it's just trying to adapt to the new normal, as they keep saying, and I think it's going to be like that for a while. So it's the same boat for everyone, really.
I was having a chat with John Hardy yesterday, one of our ambassadors, to say that you're coming on the podcast and see if there's anything that he could add to the running order. And he said you love your watches. He said, oh, yeah, to show us your latest watch.
No, I can't do that. No, I do like my watches. It's a little hobby I've got into at the moment. And, you know, they're not the worst places to spend your money. They sort of, you're sometimes told not to call them investments because obviously anything can happen. But, yeah, I like my watches. And although I'm training with a Casio at the moment, so... I'm not that flash with them, but I do like them, like a lot of people.
And just on the training there, as you say, Hamish, in terms of looking forward for Edinburgh, you must be quite excited to get back to things because you guys are in pretty decent form in terms of the Pro 14 standings, and obviously you've got two tasty derbies with Glasgow to look forward to. So how much are you excited by what the next few weeks can bring?
Yeah, very exciting. I just hope that we don't see a second spike and it all puts stuff on the back burners again, because obviously that's something everyone in sport's a bit worried about. But yeah, we can just control the controllables and get back to training and do what's necessary. I mean, yeah, when the coronavirus sort of hit, it was a bit gutting for everyone at Edinburgh because we're probably having the best season we've had in years, you know, in the quarterfinals of Europe, top of our conference in the Pro 14, and sort of flying high. So we're in a really good spot. I think we need to win one of these Glasgow fixtures to get a home semi-final, which would put us, I think, against potentially Ulster. Whereas if you come second, you'd probably play Leinster away. So obviously the benefits of winning those games are huge. And obviously those rivalry games against Glasgow are always tough. So they'll be very tough fixtures. I don't know what the crowd situation is or anything. I think they're still going to be behind closed doors for August, but hopefully, if we get to a final or a semi-final, hopefully they'll be able to get a few fans in there.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so. And I saw John Barkley had a little bit of a bit of banter with you on Instagram the other day, Hamish, when you were back in training.
Always. He's relentless. Well, he's at home with his three kids at the moment, so I think he's got nothing better to do but hound me on Instagram. So, but yeah, we have a bit of banter on Instagram. It's all jokes, but he's quite funny on the old Instagram, isn't he?
And any sort of banter with Ryan Wilson over the next few weeks leading up to those games against Glasgow?
You know what? It's funny. I haven't actually spoken to him too much. I saw on his Instagram he's been building a house or something. So he's a man of many talents. Ryan Wilson. I'm pretty sure he must have help off actual professionals, or I wouldn't be going to sleep in a house that Wilson's built. But no, I haven't spoken to him. We're normally pretty quiet leading up to games. Obviously, we'll catch up when we see each other. And if we're in Scotland camps together, obviously we're pretty close. But yeah, last game out there, he was a bit he's a bit annoying in games to play against, as you guys may well know from watching Scotland, England, and stuff like that. He gets under people's skin. Let's put it that way.
I love the way you use the term professionals there, Hamish, because we had DTH Van der Merwe on the podcast the other week, and he said he was helping Ryan building the house. So.
I wasn't referring to DTH as one of the professionals. I'm hoping there's someone there overseeing everything who's actually knows what they're doing. But no disrespect to DTH, but I'm not sure if he's got any experience with that sort of stuff. But we'll see. I look forward to going around and seeing it, but I don't want to spend too much time in it in case it falls down. But we'll see.
And obviously, Hamish is up in Scotland preparing for Edinburgh to return, but his roots are back here where I am based and where Mark's based at the moment in Cheshire. And Hamish, first and foremost, you know, you obviously know Mark from your Wilmslow days and the great work that the Looseheads Foundation are doing. And for you as a player in the game, is it brilliant to see something like Looseheads, but something as a foundation which is based in Cheshire doing so much great work around raising mental health in society and in rugby as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's all about raising awareness, and I think Mark and Rob and the boys at Looseheads are all doing such a great job, and it's great to see a charity from my neck of the woods doing it, because we all know that mental health is affecting so many people now, and it's good that people feel that they can come out and say they've struggled with stuff in the past. I feel like I've been, well, lucky in a way that I don't think I've ever struggled with anything too badly. Obviously, you have a bit of anxiety to games or after games, and you get your lows and your highs from rugby, which can affect you slightly. But I know personally a lot of friends who have been affected by it, and it's one of those things that no one's immune to it. You know, you may never have had mental health problems, and then after your rugby career, you might get some stuff. So I think it's important to have these charities supporting people, and yeah, helping people get through, because that's the main thing. You need to have a good support network, whether that's family, friends, and you just need to be as open as you can about it, because, you know, if people feel they can turn to you, then that's the main thing. I mean, you only have to look at celebrities and comedians like Robin Williams and Jim Carrey have all had these problems, and when you look at their lives and stuff, they're the funniest people in the world, but really they've got these demons. So I think it's important that we do speak about it, and just if people are struggling, that you can just be as supportive as you can, really.
Yeah, and you touch on sort of the low points that you can have in your career, Hamish, and what's been a reoccurring theme for us on these podcasts in the last few weeks is talking about injuries that players pick up, and because they're such a big part of our sport. And I know, obviously, Hamish, unfortunately, your World Cup was cut short due to the knee injury against Ireland. So how tough was that for you in terms of those low points that you mentioned? Because I can imagine since you first won your first cap back in 2015 that you did have a target set on representing Scotland in Japan.
Yeah, it's moments like that are probably when it is really tough on players, because you build towards what, 4 years and building towards the World Cup. So to go there and get injured was pretty gutting. But I think, like I say, about having a support system around you, I think if I was single and going back to a flat by myself, that would have been really hard. But luckily, I've got my family and I've got my daughter, and that really helped, because you go back home and, you know, it's life as normal. You've got to go back home and change nappies, and you can't suddenly your focus completely changes, and you almost forget a bit about the rugby, because, you know, there is more important things in life. And that's what I mean by, if you have a family or have close friends or a mum, a dad, a brother, anyone who can really get you through it, I think that's really important. Because like I say, if I'd have been going home to an empty flat after just 4 years of hard work, straight down the pan, that would have been, I think that would have been really difficult. So it was great to come home and see the family.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned as well in the past, Hamish, when we've seen some of your former Scotland teammates hang up the boots in recent times, about how important it is to enjoy every moment when you pull on the Scotland shirt or whatever you pull on your club shirt as well, because it could be over in a blink of an eye. So is it important to try and cherish those moments as much as you can?
Oh, 100%. I mean, every time you pull on that Scotland jersey or an Edinburgh jersey, or for any player, any club jersey, you know it could be your last, whether that's through injury or through performance. You know, for Scotland, you know, there's a lot of players who probably pulled on that jersey thinking it's not going to be their last time, and it was, because whether that's performance-based or injuries or players coming through, and I think you just need to cherish every moment, because it can, it can end in a blink of an eye, to put a bit of a towner on it. But, you know, that's why it's so, also so special. That's why it's so special to be involved in professional rugby, because, yeah, I suppose it can be ended quite abruptly.
Yeah, and then just in terms of your injury, Hamish, I know, I mean, they're never nice. They're always a negative point to pick up an injury. But one of the positives was that it wasn't an extensive layoff as it may have at first feared, and you were back in fine form for the Six Nations and back in action for Edinburgh before the COVID-19 situation hit. But before we go into sort of your international career and your time with Edinburgh, Hamish, let's just talk about Wilms, though, if you don't mind. And obviously, as we said before, that it's a club very close to a few people here on the podcast. And Mark showed me a picture yesterday, Hamish, where you returned to the club to present them with a Scotland shirt. I think it was a couple of years ago now. So how much do you look back on your time with Wilms, though, and do you try and get back to the club as much as you can?
Yeah, I mean, I've been meaning to go back to Wilms and present that jersey for ages. Because I said to Mark when we did it, I said, listen, it was 2018, I think. And obviously I made my first cap back in 2015. I've been meaning to give Wilms a jersey because it's a club that's obviously very close to my heart. My brother played there. My little brother played there. All my close mates from primary school played there. I've got mates who still play there. I think the last time I went back was last year. I can't remember who we were playing, but I watched one of the first games and Danny Kennedy was playing. So I've still got friends who are still playing there. And it's great to go down. You still see the familiar faces down there who I was playing with, some of their kids, and the dads are still down there watching, which is great. You know, you've got a very loyal fan base down at Wilms, though. And I can't say enough good things about the club, really. I think I started playing there when I was 5 years old. So yeah, Wilms is very close to my heart. And yeah, I went down there actually to do a bit of fitness during the lockdown as well. I don't know. I didn't actually ask permission, but I'm sure it's all right. I went and ran on the pitch. So yeah, it's a great club, and who knows, one day after I retire, maybe I'll blow the cobwebs off the boots and have a run out.
We might keep you to that. Well, we will.
And it'd be right in saying as well, Hamish, that when you were with Wilms, Owen, in those Colts and junior days, you were a winger.
I was. That was very young. That was when Chris George was my coach, because I played a year up. I think it must have been when we won the national champs 1 year. I think I'm right in saying that. Maybe not. I might be making that up. But we
Cheshire Cup.
That's it. We won not the nationals. That would have been even better. But we won the Cheshire Cup, which felt like the nationals when you're 12 years old. But yeah, I was on the wing, and because I was a year below, and I was quite small for my age anyway, playing a year up. So they I don't even know if I was that quick, but they just sort of shoved me on the wing, and I got on with it. And yeah, it was good to play on the wing. But then I think after I went into my own age grade, that's when I sort of moved to flanker and centre. I think I've even had one game where I played at 10 in one tournament, but I think that was when I was being a bit of a prima donna coming back from school and being like, I want to play 10, and I was absolute garbage.
Every self-respecting 7 is a 10, really.
And Mark, just to bring you in, obviously, we've got Hamish on, and you managed to make contact with him last week to get him on the podcast, because he is part of Wilmslow Rugby Club, which is your local club. So is it great that you were able to bring people like Hamish on today, but also to see some of the talent that's actually come through the Wilmslow ranks?
Yeah, without saying, Hamish is a major celebrity at our club. He might not know this, but those of us who waver a little internationally usually find ourselves supporting Scotland because of Hamish. So we're all gathered around the 32-inch TV, which is a bit ridiculous, willing on our old boy. When we got in touch a couple of years ago and Hamish came and enormously graciously presented us with his shirt, I think Mike Blackett and I, the first team manager, who've known each other forever, When Hamish stayed behind and he did a bit of fitness, because he's a fit boy, isn't he? And we were just remarking on what a normal bloke he is. And I say that because he's a superstar, an absolute superstar on the pitch, but as down to earth as you could ever meet. And that mix of humility but dedication is rare, I think, and that's what stands out for me. When I was as gutted, probably nowhere near as much as he was, when I watched that Ireland game and saw him come off after 20 minutes and thought, because I remember in 2018 he talked about getting fit for the World Cup, and you know, it comes around, it's fleeting, isn't it? This international stardom comes around, you blink and it's gone. You've got to grab your chances, as Hamish has just said.
And for you, Mark, what kind of stands out in terms of Hamish's talents? Because you played in a very similar position to Hamish, but what makes him stand out from the rest, do you think?
Yeah, I had to cheat to be half as good as he was when he was about 15. So there's no parallel at all. I think I'm a student of the game, and I'm a student of the position of back row, and specifically open sides. And I think what Hamish has done is made... He might not be the tallest, and he might not be the heaviest, but oh my God, he packs a punch. And I think that sets him apart from the also-rans. And to be, you know, flicking around, you know, I consume everything about rugby, and for Hamish Watson to be talked about as a lion in 2021 is exactly the right barometer.
Absolutely, Mark. And in terms of you, Hamish, I know in a couple of interviews you've done in recent years, people have asked you about kind of how well you kind of play in that position, and people say, oh, well, look at Hamish's size compared to other back rowers. But have you maybe had to say, well, I'm going to prove a point here, because some people may not associate you with that position? Or is it kind of you play your own game and let everybody else get on with it?
Yeah, I suppose it's definitely something that came up a lot in my career when I was younger, that, you know, you're quite small for a forward or small for a back rower. And it was never anything that sort of worried me too much, because I know that on the pitch and in the gym and stuff, I was always keeping up with people who were a lot heavier than me, or who were 110 kilos. I was always doing the same sort of weights as them. So I was never worried about that sort of stuff. And you've just got to try and use it to your advantage. You're a bit shorter, so you've got a smaller centre of gravity. It's better for carrying sometimes. So you've just got to use it to your advantage. Obviously, I don't really go up in the line out. So that's probably the main thing I have against me, that... I'm not a line-out option. I mean, I can jump, but then it's what's the point when you've got your six who's maybe 5 inches taller than you? So it's it's not something I've dwelled on massively, apart from when you were younger. I think it holds you back a bit when you're younger, and I get a lot of kids messaging me on Instagram being like, oh, how I get told I'm too small, and stuff like this. And I think that's something I had to battle with my whole time. So you just got to make sure that you're doing all your other stuff to the best of your ability, and yeah, I think eventually coaches realise that if you've got other strings to your bow, it's not too much of a big deal.
Yeah, is that kind of the key thing that you say to those kids that may be messaging you, Hamish, who maybe have those setbacks, but just carry on playing your natural game?
Yeah, you've got to just realise the other advantages. Obviously, it's better for going over ball. It's harder to move you. There's less limbs to grab than a big back rower going for ball. Yeah, in carrying, I quite like, I know when I play against people who are short and stocky, that it's bloody hard to tackle them sometimes. So, you know, to these young kids, if they can build up their carrying, or they work on their ball skills or other stuff, then if they can do as much stuff like that, then, and I think the game's sort of moving away a bit as well from, you know, maybe 10 years ago, it was, let's get the heaviest, biggest boys on the park. And don't get me wrong, you want big players in your team. You can't have a 15 players who are 5'11". Do you know what I mean? So you need big players. But I think the game is moving slightly away from just let's get the 15 biggest players on the pitch.
Just in terms of you moving up in the ranks, if you like, obviously you do leave Cheshire, to probably the disappointment of Mark, but you go to the Midlands to play for Oakham School, and that comes with it Leicester's academy as well. How was that for you during that time in your career, and what age were you when you decided to make that move?
So we saw from Terranova, most of that's the primary school I went to. Most of the guys were going away to other schools outside of sort of the Cheshire area. And for me, I think Oakham was always on my radar, because back then it was it still is a big rugby school and had great rugby coaches. And that's what sort of drew me towards it. I was never too focused on my academics. So I went straight for the school who had two rugby coaches at the time, Mr. Smith, who's still at Ian Smith, and Glenn Gelderbloom, who both have strong Leicester Tigers ties, both played for Leicester Tigers. And I thought that was going to be the best route, even at 13, to get me, or me and my dad did anyway. that was going to be the best route to try and get me to the next level rugby-wise. So I moved there at 13 and then played all my school rugby there and went to Leicester Tigers Academy straight out of school through the help of my coaches. They managed to get me a few trials in my last year at school and, yeah, then spent a year at Leicester Tigers.
Yeah, and I noticed as well, Hamish, a couple of years ago on Instagram that you posted kind of a note that you saved in your phone, if that's right, from sort of 2011, about the time that Leicester Tigers said, actually, unfortunately, we don't want to keep you on at the moment, but you used the hashtag Monday Motivation. I mean, what was that kind of moment for you like as a young player who's kind of gone to Oakham, gone into the Leicester Tigers Academy to just say, right now, you're not for us, unfortunately?
Yeah, it was funny. I dug that up off an old phone. It was in my notes, and I remember writing that straight after I had a one-to-one with Neil McCarthy, who was my academy manager at the time. And it was absolutely gutting because I always supported Sale Sharks when I was growing up. Obviously, they're our team back home. But ever since I was at school, you know, Leicester Tigers were that local team round school. So to go there was amazing, and to play a year there. And then to have a setback like that was very gutting. I mean, everyone has to take these. I've talked a lot about everyone has to take these setbacks at some point or another. I think every good player or anyone in any profession, whether it's professional sport or not, you're going to take setbacks, and it's how you react to them. And I think you need those setbacks to become a better person and become a better player. I think everyone who's reached any high level in any career has had a setback. So I kind of, at the time, you don't realise that. At the time, you're completely gutted and you don't realise that this setback is going to help you. But luckily, Leicester Tigers helped me get my opportunity with Scotland Under-20s. And luckily, I played well enough for Scotland Under-20s that they offered me a 7s and 15s contract. So straight after Leicester, I moved to Edinburgh. And been here ever since, really. So it all worked out in the long run.
Yeah. So was that Scotland recognition at under 20 level, Hamish, kind of not a lifeline, but for a branch for you to hold on to after you did leave Leicester, that you could maybe move north of the border and continue playing?
Yeah, 100%. I can't remember at the time, but I don't think at that age I had an agent or anything. I had someone trying to help me out, and I had Ian Smith, my old school coach, trying to help me out with other opportunities after Leicester said they weren't going to keep me on. I think it was just lucky in a way that I was playing Scotland Under-20s, and when I got told, so that was after the Six Nations, I think, and after I got told that I wasn't getting kept on at Leicester, I had the Junior World Cup coming up, so I knew that I'd have another shot window to, you know, try and play as well as I could. And I think after the Junior World Cup, that's when I got offered the contract with Edinburgh and Edinburgh and Scotland Sevens. So I suppose it was lucky in a way, but obviously you had to still play well during the Under-20s World Cup to get that contract. But yeah, sort of landed on my feet undeliberately, which I'm obviously very grateful for, with Edinburgh for giving me the opportunity after Scotland Under-20s.
And obviously there you say that you had the Sevens contract, Hamish, and you were playing 15 age grade rugby for Scotland. So was it a natural step for you to go into the 15s game, or was there a part of you that wanted to maybe stay in the Sevens game with Scotland?
No, I think I always saw it as a, and I think the SIU always saw that program when I was doing it as like a pathway system, really. Back then we weren't very good at Sevens at all. We were it was a mixture between six young guys like me who were 19, 20, some 18-year-olds. And then you had actually amateur and semi-pros club players playing. And then you had two full-time Scotland players, Andrew Turnbull and Colin Gregor. You're only two full-time, maybe Scott Riddell as well might have been full-time, I can't remember at the time, but you had maybe three full-time players and the rest were young academy boys and amateur Scotland club players. So it's very different to what it is now when you see Scotland winning at Twickenham 2 years running. It was a very different team. We weren't very good at all, and it was still great though. The experiences of going away were fantastic, and you know, I would encourage any young player to try and play as much Sevens as they can at a top level, because you work on your basic skills, your tackling, your passing, your carrying. I think the best thing for me was just that tackling, and because you're coming up against people, some of the best Sevens players in the world, and all of a sudden you've got 10 metres either, or 5 metres either side of you. and you've got to really be on it. And I think it really helps work on your skills. But I think, sorry, going back, that was a bit of a tangent, but going back to your original question, I did look at it as I never thought, oh, I want to do this for 10 years playing sevens. Do you know what I mean? I always looked at it as a 1 or 2 year thing. And then I played a bit of Edinburgh, first team for Edinburgh that year as well. So I always think I wanted to play 15s.
And in terms of Scotland as well, Hamish, if I'm right in saying that when you were growing up, you had to hang the Scotland flag on your wall to prove to everyone you were Scottish, because obviously people listening to this will hear your accent. But I know, reading stuff, Hamish, that you have supported Scotland since you were really young, and the thought of playing for England never really crossed your mind. So when you were, you know, in those representative squads for Scotland, was that the always going to be the aim to represent Scotland?
Yeah, definitely. I think anyone who from the Wilmslow Wolves listening will know my dad's got a pretty English accent as well, but he wouldn't let me support anyone else other than Scotland. It was never a choice, really. But at 5 or 6, I think I would have gone to my first game at Murrayfield at about 9 years old. I went to watch Scotland versus New Zealand, and ever since I went up to Murrayfield, it's always been Scotland for me, which is quite nice. And I know some people have gone down different pathways of playing for England and then going to Scotland. And when I tell this story, whatever, some people might be like, oh yeah, whatever. But it is genuine. And I've always supported Scotland and always wanted to play for Scotland, which is a bit weird, I think, some people find for a kid growing up in England. But I quite liked it as well. I quite like being the underdog, and I remember I had a mate at school who we used to bet a fiver and a Mars bar on for the Calcutta Cup. I must have lost about 50 quid during primary school. But
we must have had a fair few Mars bars as well.
Yeah, exactly. But I've always supported Scotland, and I'm obviously so proud that eventually got that opportunity as well.
There's one chap who's always defended your Scottish heritage in at Wimslow, and that's my mate, your mate, Brian Kennedy. He won't have anyone say otherwise.
Well, there you go. Those boys are as Scottish as it comes, two Scottish parents. And I have to tell them sometimes, oi, stop supporting England, you lot. they'll hate me saying that, but they had their bloody England flags painted on their face for the Football World Cup. I was like, you lads can't be bloody doing that. You're as Scottish as it comes. Exactly. And I have to put those boys in check. But yeah, Brian's always been a big believer in me, and yeah, I still see Bri quite a bit, and obviously he loves Wilmslow Wolves, so he's a great Wilmslow man as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it's music to Dave Nichols' ears as well that you stuck with Scotland, because he's our resident Scotland fan on here, Hamish. So,
okay, yeah, very similar story. Scottish parents, born in England, so it's been interesting growing up.
It's not been an easy ride. Is.
No, well, I've got a bit better the last few years at least.
Exactly.
I was going to say, have you still been having that bet, Hamish, with Mars bars and Calcutta cups? You must have won a bit of money.
I haven't actually. I need to get back in contact with him. I don't actually speak to him that much anymore, but I should. Well, I think over the last 10 years, I'd still probably be losing a bit, but I might try and tap him up from a Mars bar and a fiver from a couple of years ago.
And just before we go into sort of the Scotland stuff a little bit more, Hamish, just to touch on Edinburgh, I know you said a contract extension with the club last year, I think I'm right in saying, and one of the quotes that stood out for me reading the articles yesterday was that you said you couldn't see yourself playing anywhere else further down the line. So what makes Edinburgh such a special place to play at the moment? Is it the ambition of the club going forward?
Yeah, Edinburgh is obviously my home. I've been here for nine years. Whenever the new season starts, I think I'll be going into my 10th year. So it's a funny club. Any person who comes here for even 2 years, they never want to leave. It's one of those places. I think the boys are great. If you forget about the rugby for a second, the city is amazing. It's an amazing place to live. Anyone who's been here will agree with that. If the weather was a bit better, I'd say it's probably the best place to live in the world, but the weather hinders that a bit. But yeah, and the rugby at the moment is really building as well, which is another massive factor of wanting to stay. The culture of the club's good at the moment. We've got a great group of boys, and I think that's a massive factor as well. Any player who comes, I know they always fit in well with the lads, and we're not like an old school club, and we're the boys just all get on well with each other. We all get on well, whether they've played zero games for Edinburgh or 100-odd games, we all get along. So I think that's really important as well. And finally, we look like we're in a really good place rugby-wise as well. And actually, Hopefully, before my time's up, we may win something as well, which would be great.
Hamish, just on a slight tangent, I know you said you've been in Scotland for 9 years now, and all being well with Nicola Sturgeon and with what she says, I'm off to the Highlands in a couple of weeks. Something that I've wanted to do for a couple of years. Given you've been there for that length of time, what are your Highland tips? Where should I go?
You know what? I'm actually quite bad. My missus keeps saying we need to explore more, and I'm a bit of a nester. I'm quite bad. I don't really leave Edinburgh, which is actually really, really bad of me. But I mean, we've been to Inverness on a rugby trip, been to Aberdeen. I've been to Lewis before, but I haven't gone like north. So I'm not sure. I'm the best man to actually ask for that advice. I would bang it in the Google, but hopefully you get that trip sorted. And hopefully there's no more spikes or whatever. So you'll enjoy it anyway. I hear it's amazing. And I do need to be a bit more adventurous, really.
What do you think's kind of been behind this Edinburgh coming through as a real force in the Pro 14 recently? It's one of those that seems to have kind of coincided with Richard Cockerell coming in, but I think there's quite a few young lads seemingly coming through as well.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I always think ever since I've been here, we've always had really good players at Edinburgh. We've always had good Scotland internationals. If you look at team sheets, you know, we're always putting out a lot of internationals, and it's never really clicked for whatever reason. And when Richard Cockerell did come, he's obviously come from an environment like Leicester Tigers where he's very used to winning. And I think that winning feeling, that winning culture is a habit. You can have the best players in the world, but if you've not got that culture, and if you're not used to winning and used to getting over the line, I think it's very hard. You see it in football a lot, and you see it, yeah, you see it in any sport really, that you need to get used to winning. It's a habit, and if you're even on your worst day, you can still grind out a victory in rugby or a 1-0 win in football, and it might not be pretty at times. I think that's what we've sort of gone to at Edinburgh. We're not, at the start, we weren't too bothered about impressing the fans. You know, the fans are going to come if you're winning. It's not about playing the prettiest rugby at times, which if you've watched some Edinburgh games, sometimes we are a bit gritty to play against. But at the end of the day, we're winning, and that's what fans want to see, and that's what the players want as well. I think it has coincided with Cockers. We've obviously got great players at Edinburgh now. Got loads of good young players coming through, loads of future Scotland internationals coming through, and Scotland players at the moment. So we're in a very good position as a club, and I think if we can hold on to as many players as possible and hold on to our coaching staff, then I think, like I say, it is coming.
And during your time, Hamish, as well, I think I'm right, so you maybe have two or three coaches at Edinburgh, with Richard being obviously the latest. What's it like to work with Richard? Because we see the impact he had in the Premiership, and he seems to have had a brilliant impact across the border as well.
Yeah, I've gotten well with all my coaches at Edinburgh, to be honest. I liked all my coaches, even the ones who have sort of gone and left a bit abruptly. I don't have any bad words to say about them, really. And Cockers is the same. I think he's been great. He's been great coming in. He's obviously a tough man to impress sometimes, and you've got to. He's tough, but he's also fair. You know, if you toe the line and you're committed to the club and committed to what he wants, then you know you get along fine. I think he is a bit old school in the way that if you don't like his way, then you know, then you're probably not going to enjoy being coached by him. But I think that's also, I think players are going to enjoy being coached by someone when you're winning. And do you know what I mean? If it's tough when you're losing, then it's easy to moan. But if it's training's tough and the coaching's tough, but you're winning, then it's hard to argue with anything, because it shows how great it's been at Edinburgh and shows that it's worked. And I think at the time when Cockers did come in, we probably needed that that hard edge and to be a bit tougher, because we were a young squad who had so much potential but couldn't really get there, whether that was from coaching or from us just being young, I'm not sure. But Cockers has come in and turned around the club, so it's full credit to him and full credit to all the boys who started playing well as well.
And we talked about kind of Pro 14 and how well you guys are doing this season, Hamish, but Europe as well, obviously through to the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup, have been right in saying, and I mean, definitely from an outside looking in, Edinburgh have made those steps forward in Europe definitely over the last 5 years or so. So is that something on the club's radar as well this year?
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think we've got, well, We've got Bordeaux in the quarterfinal away, which is a very tough place to go to. We just narrowly got beaten to them in the group stages out there. So that'll be a tough game. But yeah, if we win that, we'll be flying high. And obviously, that's not the main European competition. We want to be back playing in the main one, which we all got to the quarterfinal in last year, which was great, and probably could have won that game against Munster, which was pretty gutting. But yeah, I think any sort of silverware would be great, and we want to win anything we're involved in, whether it's the Challenge Cup or too used to watch United, but whether it's the Challenge Cup or the Champions Cup, we want to be in it to win it and get to finals. And like I say, it's a habit. So if we, you know, if you get to a final and you unfortunately went out to lose it, it's just the experience of all these young guys and get used to playing in these huge games, get used to making finals. And then the next time you come round, you know, you would have been there before, and it's easier to achieve that goal.
Moving on to Scotland, Hamish, in terms of you making your debut in 2015, I'm sure you've been asked a number of questions and about that time, because obviously on the day it's brilliant for you to make your debut, but the result and the way the game went was probably something that was quickly erased from your mind. But how special was it for you to make your debut nonetheless that day?
Yeah, it's a weird one. It always comes up in interviews and stuff, my debut, because it was a bit of a weird one. It's such a day of mixed emotions. I mean, it's the proudest, still probably one of the proudest days of my rugby career, or is the proudest day of my rugby career. Representing Scotland was always a dream, and finally doing it was amazing. But then to lose to Italy, which none of the boys had experienced at home for a long time, or I can't remember last time we lost to Italy at home, apart from 2015. So it was gutting, and it was a bit of a roller coaster. Obviously, I got yellow card at the very end of the game as well, which also rubbed a bit of salt in the wounds, but I still don't think that was my fault, but you know, we won't go there. But yeah, it was gutting, and it was still, but then still my family were all there. I enjoyed the moment. I still tried to take it all in, and it's still a day I'll never forget for all the right reasons, really, because that still set up my international career. And I know a few of the boys, the older boys, were really gutted about the result, but for me, it was still an amazing day for me and my family, who have, we all worked so hard to get to that goal, and it was great to finally achieve it, even though it ended badly.
You say that as well, Hamish, that it set up your kind of international career, and obviously you do go on to play in the summer in Italy as well, but you have to wait a while for cap number 3 to come around. Do you think maybe at that time, obviously you would have had aspirations to play in the 2015 World Cup, but do you think that may have come a little bit too soon, or is that an unfair comment to make?
I don't know. It's a tough one because, as you know, Hards came over from New Zealand, who had actually, at the time, obviously, you've got to back yourself as a player. And at the time, I was like, nah, I should be going or whatever. But then Hards went on and probably played some of his best rugby at that 2015 World Cup and had an amazing World Cup. So he sort of proved his point that he was there. At that time, he was probably the right man for the job to wear the 7 jersey for Scotland. And he played awesome that year. So full credit to Hards. But yeah, at the time, I was absolutely gutted, as any player is. It doesn't matter whether you've got 2 caps or 100 caps. You always believe you're good enough to be there. Or if you don't, you're probably not doing the right job if you don't think you've got to have some sort of arrogance. You know, it's all about being humble at the right times. But then you've got to have a bit of self-belief as well. Or otherwise, there's no point you doing it if you think you're sitting there and you're the, I don't know, 50th best 7 in the world. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to have a bit of self-belief. And I was gutted at the time not making it. But, you know, maybe I needed that another little setback to take a year out of Scotland stuff, concentrate on my club stuff, realise that, hang on, I'm probably not as good as I think I am, and work on a lot of stuff that needed working on. And like I say, Hards had a really good really good World Cup as well.
Because I was going to say, it did seem like that may have been a fuel for some motivation for you, Hamish, because you say there you were playing some great rugby with Edinburgh, and I know in an interview you said that Vern Cotter kind of gave you a few tips to work on. So was that kind of that motivation and that maybe hunger and anger combined that made you thought, well, I can work on this and I'll come back stronger from this setback?
Yeah, 100%. It's like we were saying before, you're never going to get everything in your career go your way. And I think that moment for me probably was a moment of realising that whether I think I'm good enough or not, it doesn't really matter because the coach doesn't think you're good enough. So you have to try and adapt and make your game a bit better. And that's what I tried to go away and do. And eventually kept my club form up. And you just got to try and make it as hard as you can for coaches to not ignore what you're doing. Obviously, some coaches will want a slightly different player than others. And Vern wanted that. So he gave me, like I say, gave me a few things, but I think it's just taking those setbacks, and you need to realise that you do need to get better as a player. So that's what I tried to do, and hope it all came around in the end. And I got another shot a year later, which was longer than I probably would have wanted to wait. But sometimes you have to wait that long.
Well, I don't think many people can ignore some of the performance you did put in for Scotland off that, Hamish. I mean, one of them that sticks out is the 2017 Six Nations win over Ireland. I think it was 19 tackles in 49 minutes or something ridiculous like that. So I know you said before that it wasn't about proving a point, but was that just kind of, I've got this chance now, let's make the best of it and the most of it that I can?
Yeah, definitely. That Six Nations, we felt really good and we went into that. I think the Ireland game was the opening game of the tournament, and we beat Ireland for the first time in a while, and it was a great day for all of us. And I think it was. I think at that stage, I started the games in the autumn before that. But Scotland have always had a very good back row, so I think every time you play for Scotland, you've got to go out there and prove a point. And like we said about the jersey, you never know when it's going to be your last. And every game you've got to be on it. International stuff, you have to be at the top of your game and keep performing to get that jersey. Because if you only get so many chances if you have an off day.
And when we had John Barkley on the pod, Hamish, a couple of months ago, one of his Scotland highlights that he mentioned was that win over Australia in Sydney in 2017, and a certain someone scored his second try for his country in that win. I mean, just talk us through that moment and that kind of victory in Australia, because it seemed like quite a monumental moment for Scotland at the time.
Yeah, that was a massive victory for all the boys and for Scotland, because we've been pretty bad with away form, and we don't get very many big scalps away from home. So to beat Australia, who's obviously a top team, and away from home was a really good result for us. It was probably my best away victory for Scotland. And like Barks obviously said as well, it was a great day for all of us and a really proud day. It was a tough game, and we managed to pull through against a really good Australia team. So it was a great victory. And I didn't do much for that try, to be honest. I was just at the right place at the right time and just dived over the line. But it was a good win for us.
I was going to say, there was probably a bit of sevens around the support line and finish, Hamish. I think you're doing yourself a bit of a disservice there.
Maybe. I think Spacey could have probably, when I watched that try, it was, in my head it's a lot better than it is, and then I see like a highlight of it and I'm like, oh god, a Spacey who could have probably scored it himself, to be honest, Duncan Taylor. But I'm very thankful, yeah, that he gave me the ball, and it was a bit of link up play, but right place at the right time, really.
And one of the interesting points you said before is all about impressing the coaches at the right time, and obviously in between that period Vern leave Scotland and Gregor Townsend comes in. So was it important for you to carry on the good work that you had shown Vern to take into Gregor's plans?
Yeah, definitely. I think every time a new coach comes in, it's a clean slate for everyone, and you've got to, it doesn't matter if you've been playing really well for the previous 10 games or 50 games, however many it is. When a new coach comes in, they sometimes have new ideas or want something new around that position. So you've got to prove to the new coach coming in that you want to be his number one, basically, and that you can still do it. And anytime a new coach comes in, you've got to prove the point again and start fresh. That's just the way it is, really. And that's what all the boys tried to do with Gregor. And Gregor's obviously done a great job since. And I really believe in Gregor and think Scotland have got the right man for the job for us moving forward and finally trying to win some silverware with Scotland as well.
Because I saw an interview as well, Hamish, that before, I think it was during the Six Nations, that you compared Gregor to your much-loved Ole Gunnar Solskjaer back in March. Is that quite a good comparison now, do you think?
Yeah, well, you've got to be careful comparing him to Ole, because Ole's a bit up and down. But at the time, I think United were flying. So, I did compare it. I I obviously really like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and I really like Gregor. So at the time, it seemed like a really good comparison. But don't hold me to that. If United start really struggling, then still compare the two. But yeah, at the time, I think it was just leading up to the Wales game, which we didn't play, I think, that interview. But it's a weird one. Anyone in sport, it's such a tough environment to be a player or be a coach, definitely at times, because I remember, I think at the time, Gregor was getting a lot of stick for his performances against Ireland and against England. Obviously, we'd lost our first two games. But then you look what happened. We went away to Italy, beat Italy and beat France. And, you know, on another day, we should have beaten Ireland. I know we're sometimes quite bad, as Scots were saying, that should have, could have, but definitely against Ireland away from home, that's the closest we've come to them, and should have won that game. And then England was just an absolute disaster. It was anyone's game. It was a horrible game with rubbish conditions, and it wasn't a great showcase for rugby, and that was really a 50-50 game on the day as well. So, you know, I don't want to be that person, but you could be sitting here with four wins right now. And I think Greg has done a great job, and sometimes you have to ride that wave when everyone's giving you a bit of stick, because one minute you're a villain having lost two games and not performed that well, and then next minute you'd be in France who are going for a grand slam and everyone loves them again. So it's that's the world we live in, and that's sport, isn't it? It's quite fickle. I know that, being a football fan, that one minute I'll be saying Rashford's garbage, then he scores some amazing goals, I'm like, oh, he's the greatest striker in the world. So, you know, we're all bad for that, and a bit fickle as fans sometimes. And I think coaches know that, though, that's what they're going to get, and that's what they sign up for a bit as well.
I think that's just United fans.
Yeah, maybe.
Nice, Rob, nice.
That's unfair. That's below the belt, I think.
Maybe it is. We're just too used to winning that I can't hack it sometimes.
I thought Hamish's comment in the interview was a bit below the belt, saying Liverpool's title when nobody cares about it because it's behind closed doors.
Yeah, well, there you go. I don't even watch football anymore. Did Liverpool go and win it, did they?
Not the right podcast to be start having jibes at Liverpool, Hamish. back to the serious stuff then. In terms of you, Hamish, you talked about there about that some of the results Gregor's been able to get, and it just shows what an impact he is having on the Scotland national team. And those encounters with England definitely over the last few years have certainly... had the fair share of drama, and obviously one of the standout ones for you would have been the Calcutta Cup a couple of years ago to win at Murrayfield against England. But for you, Hamish, I mean, you probably get asked this question a number of times as well, that do those games have any extra significance for you because of where you grew up, or is it just as any Scot would be, it's always a big game when you play the old enemy?
I think they have a significance because, yeah, like you say, it's a big game for Scotland. It's, you know, there's a buzz. I know there's a lot of stuff in the press this year about all sorts of stuff about the Scotland-England rivalry, but no matter how you try and sugarcoat it, it's always going to be there. It's always going to be a bit boiled over. Obviously, we all get along now, you know, but it's always going to have a bit of extra oomph to it. And I think every fan, English, Scottish, you know that when you go to those games, when you watch the games on TV, there's a bit of extra something around them. And now that they're always tough, even if Scotland have lost every game and they go to play England, it's always going to be a tough game for England because that's the way that fixture is, and vice versa. So it's a big fixture for all the boys, and there is a big buzz around those games. And like you say, that Calcutta game was absolutely amazing when we beat them in 2018. It was something some of the older boys hadn't even done. I don't think it had been done since 08. So it's something we need to replicate a bit more often. And it was a bit gutting the draw the year after because we could have won that in the end as well in one of the most bizarre games of anyone's life, I think. But and then this year was gutting to lose the Calcutta Cup in the way we did because we really thought we had a chance to win it again that day, and it was just a kicking contest really, and whoever sort of made the first mistake was going to win that one, which was a bit of a shame to end the last two really close rivalries. But you know, we get another chance. This coming year
still feels like it's kind of heading in the right direction though on that front, and it has been nice kind of winning a few, and you know, I think we probably should have won that one at Twickenham the other year as well, had it not been for sort of a little bit of magic at the end. But I guess kind of for me now, you're one of probably the first three or four names on the team sheet for Scotland, and you know, it seems to come along quite quickly. Do you kind of see yourself in that sort of senior leader shit type role for Scotland?
I suppose it's a weird one because I just don't think I'm that old. I think it's quite bad. But then I actually look around the squad now and I'm like, shoot, who's older than me here? And I'm running out of names now, which was never a problem a few years ago. But yeah, I suppose I'm getting to be one of the older guys, which is always a bit scary. But yeah, we've got such a great young talented squad with Scotland as well. And I try. I'm not a big leader in the classroom, so to speak. So off the field in the meeting and stuff like that. But I try and lead as best I can on the field, and I try and lead that way. But yeah, I suppose it's a weird one, really. You get young guys coming to the squad now who might have been watching you for the last 5 years, which is a bit weird. Which is always what I sort of had growing up when I first came to the Scotland squad with some of the boys. And even one of my good mates, Barks, I was watching him when I was at school, which is always a bit weird. So it's weird to think that, yeah, when some of these young guys come into the squad now, they might have been watching you for a while, because I think no player sees themselves as that older guy who's been around for a while.
It's quite a nice position to be in, though, isn't it? That, what, at 28 is it you are now? That you're kind of seen as one of those more senior players, and there seems to be kind of a really good generation coming through. And, you know, I've seen sort of Greg Laidlaw talking about it recently, and he seems to think that Scotland could be onto some silverware before much longer. Is that the kind of feeling you're getting around the squad?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's very exciting where Scotland are, and it's exciting for the fans. We've just got to try and build that consistency away from home. I think everyone knows that that's our sort of Achilles heel, getting the away wins in the Six Nations. We don't get many of them. Obviously, we've beaten Italy the last few times away from home, but apart from that, we need to work on that, and we need to, as a team, become better at that. And it's going back to the old thing we were saying before about team culture and building habits. And it's one of those things. As soon as you get one of those big away wins, then I imagine they'll be easier to come by, because people get that feeling, and then suddenly you start thinking you can go to Stade de France or Twickenham or Millennium or wherever it may be and get these wins. So but yeah, if we want to ever win anything, we're going to have to become better at that. And that's something we all need to work on.
And when you do get one of those away wins, Hamish, will we see celebrations like there was after the Calcutta Cup?
I don't think you'll ever see celebrations like that again. but who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Hopefully I'll be around for them anyway.
Yeah, because we did quiz John Barkley about it, and he went into a little bit more detail, but you're keeping your cards close to your chest there.
I can't remember any of it.
Good answer. And just on Scotland moving forward, as Dave touched on there, and you said as well, sort of the performances were encouraging during the Six Nations at Hamish. But in terms of the bigger picture, obviously COVID-19 stopped that Wales game. Was there a small part of you and the Scotland guys that you were building momentum nicely at the start of this year?
100%. We were absolutely gutted when obviously we realised why it was cancelled, because the COVID stuff, and it's obviously really serious, but we were absolutely gutted because we were down there with full momentum, having just won two games, one away against Italy and then one against the Grand Slam contenders, France. So we were flying high, and we were a bit gutted because Wales were in a bit of a tough spot as well, having only won 1-1 game. So we saw that as a really big opportunity, and especially with none of the other teams playing, we saw that as a huge opportunity to win that game and put ourselves in a really good position. But, you know, it is what it is, and it didn't go ahead, and we've got to, whenever that game comes around, refocus and make sure we're in a good place to go there and get the victory. But yeah, it was gutting to not get that game played, because obviously, like I say, we had a bit of momentum going into that.
And we had Sean Edwards on the podcast a couple of months ago as well. Hamish, who's obviously the patron of the Lutheads Foundation. And we were talking about sort of France and the Six Nations. And one of the things that he was quick to say was how impressed he was by Scotland's defensive showing during the tournament. I mean, what's changed, you think, in terms of that mentality for you guys to shut up shop when it's necessary?
Yeah, I think our defence has really, really gone up a level this Six Nations. I think that's credit to all the management, really. It's Matt Taylor, old defence coach. I got on really well with him, and he was fantastic as well. But I don't think he got the time that he needed sometimes. And I think Greg has realised that our attack's always been very good. And I think another positive thing about Gregor is he's been really good at adapting. Our attack's always been, you know, very good for Scotland. But he's been like, hang on, if we're going to want to win things, we're going to need to up our D as well. And the new defence coach who's come in, Steve Tandy, has been absolutely excellent. I think he's also got the time he needs from Gregor, which is a credit to Gregor as well. He's realised that we need to work on our D a bit. And you can see from this Six Nations where our D was the best in the comp after when it finished. I think we'd only conceded 49 points. I'm not a Norse, by the way. I only know that we had a Scotland meeting last night on Zoom. So that's the only reason I know that. But we only conceded 49 points. So that's really gimpy now. But anyway.
It was a nosy question that I asked him.
Yeah, but we had we had the best D in the comp. And I think that's a credit to all the boys and Steve Tandy as well, who's come in and changed our defence. You saw from last year when Wales went and won it, they weren't playing pretty rugby at all and weren't great to watch at times. But, you know, they had the best defence in the comp and they went and won it.
And just kind of finally, Hamish, looking ahead, Mark mentioned at the top of the podcast that I think we're all hoping on this podcast that you do make the Lions tour in 2021. And the news came out this week saying the dates have not changed for South Africa next summer. And in terms of you, Hamish, and is that an aspiration for you going forward? I know it's such a competitive position at the moment in that back row, but a lot of talk and a lot of articles around the Lions tour are suggesting that you should be one of the first names on the plane to South Africa. So is that one of your aspirations this year?
It's a bit of a weird one, really, because obviously now it's coming around again. You sort of forget about it and forget what happened 3 years ago, but now it's coming around again. I think it wouldn't be true if I said it's not in the back of most rugby players' head that they want to be on a tour at some point. But it's a weird one because it's never something I grew up wanting to do. I was never a young kid being like, oh, I want to be a Lion. It's always concentrate on, I always wanted to grow up playing for Scotland and play international stuff. And if that happens, that happens. You've got to be playing bloody well. You've got to be playing really well for Scotland this year. And to do that, you've got to play well for your club. So there's a lot of things that have to happen first before we even get to that point of the selection and whether you're good enough to be picked. So you've got to keep up your performances. And it's not something I'm thinking massively about, but obviously you see things and it's nice to have your name included in the maybes. But like you say, that position's hotly contested and there's a lot of good sevens and a lot of good back rowers. So we'll just have to wait and see, and I guess it'll be a lot on performance this year.
Well, we wait to see, Hamish, but we all hope you do pull on that famous red jersey next summer. But a tour which is probably more important than the Lions tour is the Mars 15 tour, which has been going down a storm at the moment on the Loose Heads podcast. And my very able assistant, Mark Shorten, has been hosting this. So, Mark, over to you for this.
And just before, I was reminded last week that in a rain break at Wimbledon, Pat Cash was asked about who's the greatest and who's this and who's that. And he kind of said quite arrogantly, well, it's a ridiculous comparison when you've got wooden rackets and nanotechnology and all this nonsense. And John Inverdale, who was interviewing, just looked at him and in one expression said, that's not acceptable. And consequently, the dream team that we all might have across the ages is wrapped up in one fairly easy sentence that the Martians have landed, they've challenged the Earth to the game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. We leave today, Saturday, with a team of people. It takes 4 weeks to get because we've got a supersonic charged shuttle.
Okay.
When we get there, we don't know the rarefied atmosphere. We don't know how big they'll be. We don't know lots of things, but we've made the toss and we've lost and we're away. So consequently, it's any age, any gender, any team, any nationality. And just before you dive in, I'm particularly interested in this because you said something earlier on about having the requisite amount of arrogance on the pitch. You can't believe you're the 50th best flanker if you're going to be the best one. But off the field, I've always felt rugby is the thing that has kept me sane over 35 years. And I've met some complete nutters who cross the white line and become bonkers, but off the field are brilliant and especially on tour. So there has to be an element of them playing good rugby, but almost you want to play with them.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? I've got a few of them. Maybe I'm not sure. Right. Last, here we go.
The floor is yours, Mr. Watson.
All right. So obviously, I didn't want to put too many Scots in because then I'll look very biased. But the first three are all Scottish, believe it or not. Okay. So number one, I've gone Tom Smith.
Yeah.
Number two, I've gone Ross Ford. He was obviously someone I've always looked up to and went on to get 100 odd caps for Scotland, and he's been an amazing servant. Number three, I really struggle with Tighthead, because I don't know whether it's because I don't watch Tightheads much on the field, but I really struggled with picking a Tighthead. So I found myself Googling Tighthead, best Tighthead props out there. And I was like, what am I doing? Let's just pick someone I know. So I've gone, you know what? I've gone for WP now, who I play with in Scotland now for 8 years. I think when he first came, he was an amazing ball carrier for a tight head and scored some tries from 40 metres out. And now he's one of the best scrummagers in the world as he's got a bit older. So I've gone for WP now. Four, Backies Bofa. Five, Brad Thorne. Six, Yannick Nyanga. And I don't think I can actually remember him playing like amazingly well, but I remember Rugby 08. He was absolutely unstoppable. And he had a star on his name at Rugby 08. And I just remember him being absolutely amazing at that game. I'm sure he was great as well in real life, but I've gone for Yannick Nyanga. Number seven, I've done Lewis Moody, an old Oakham boy as well, and like you say, a bit of a nutter, so I think he'd fare pretty well against aliens. Number eight, Simon Taylor. Oh. Number nine, I've gone Jus van der Estazen. Number 10, I've gone Johnny Wilkinson. And I think when I was younger, I feel really bad saying this, but I used to hate Johnny Wilkinson, because when you're younger, like, he was too good. You know, if he played for England, England won, and I hated that. And as I've got older, you can appreciate him now for how good he was and how obviously dedicated he was. So I've gone Johnny Wilkinson. 11, Jonah Lomu. 12, Luke McAllister. I loved it when he went to Sale. 13, Sonny Bill Williams. 14, I needed some Fijian, so I went Rapeni Fowfow. And he carved open Scotland at the 2003 World Cup, so I went for him. And 15, Chris Patterson. So,
wow.
A few shocks, but I feel like that's a good team.
And Patterson's the kicker, I guess.
Yeah, Patterson. Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I suppose you would. I don't know, would you go Patterson or Wilkinson? You've got two options.
Yeah. Who would be your captain?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, that's interesting, actually. I didn't really think about that. 40. Go on. We'll go Ross Ford.
and to keep them all functioning at the top of their game, who would be your water boy, your manager, your coach, and your kit man?
So, I've not gone for people, like some people won't recognise these names, but I've gone manager, I went Ian Smith, my old school coach. I had 300 caps for Leicester, was unfortunate never to get an England cap. I went coach Doddy Weir, because I think he'd be a great tourist, and I think he'll keep the boys upbeat, and, you know, he'll be a good tourer. And then kit man, I actually went a Wilmslow boy. I went Danny Kennedy because he's a rugby Norse, and I think he'd love going away with 15 absolute beasts and 15 rugby celebrities. So I actually did Danny Kennedy as my kit man and kept the Wilmslow roots there. And then water boy, I don't know if you guys know him, but I went Archie Curzon. He's obviously the guy who does the pod for Clapham Falcons and the Rigbiz podcast. So I went for him just because he thinks he's got a lot of chat, so I think he'd be quite good on that tour. See how he goes.
Just knowing Danny a little bit, he'd probably put himself down as a sub as well.
I'm pretty sure he would, but I think Kitman suits Danny well for this trip. You know, and he's got a bit of puggy, so if it comes to fighting them, it'll be all right as well.
Brilliant.
Brilliant team, Hamish, and it's been brilliant to chat to you this morning on the Loose Heads podcast. Just before we go, you are sporting, for the people who are listening, a Rex Club hat. I mean, that business is obviously with your brother. I mean, how's that going for you at the moment? And what? Just tell us a little bit about it before we let you go.
Yeah, like most companies, it's had its challenges during the lockdown period. Obviously, it's been pretty tough on everyone with coronavirus, with small businesses, but it's back up and running now. Boys are all back at work, and yeah, it's going really well. It's obviously a local business, local to you guys. It's in based in Knutsford, is where the warehouse is. So it's all going well, and yeah, we've just got to keep building the brand, and yeah, it's something me and Gus came up with years ago now, back in 2013, maybe 2012, 2013, I think it was. So, yeah, it's good. It's in a good place, and it's getting there. It's been going a while now, and it's growing by the year, which is great as well. So, yeah, if you need a cap, get on Rex Club, guys.
Is that just the website and socials?
Yeah, that's... Get in touch? Yeah, get in touch, or we do all sorts. We do all team headwear. So if your team need hats or you want an individual piece doing, then yeah, it does anything you can think of, really, with hats or beanies, whatever.
Great stuff. I'll make sure we put the your socials and website in the description of the podcast as well, Hamish. And in terms of the Loosehead stuff, Dave, obviously exciting times coming up over the next few weeks.
Yeah, so hopefully a whole new range to launch at the end of this month. So keep an eye out on our socials for a bit more information, or sort of sign up to our email newsletter. You'll be sort of amongst the first to know, and everything will be live at looseheads.co.uk, hopefully on the 31st.
Excellent stuff. Well, Hamish, it's been brilliant to chat to you this morning. Many thanks again for giving up your time.
Thanks, guys. Cheers for having me on. And yeah, hopefully see you all down at Wilmslow soon.
And many thanks to Mark, Rob and Dave for their time, as always.
Thanks, Chris.
No problem at all. And that has been another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union.